Okay. All right. So, let's continue our journey through the book of John and the Gospel of John, to be exact. Today, topic is manna, bread, and Jesus. It's a topic that relates to what we have been talking about the last couple of weeks. These last two Sundays, we have been talking about fasting, because it's the season of Lent, and it's a time when many people choose to fast. And I shared with you my personal definition of what fasting is. It's taking away something from this world in order to make more room for God in our lives. Of course, that can mean something like a digital fast or something like this, but the main form of fasting from the Bible is, of course, abstaining from food. We talked about the different ways in which we can fast, so that we really free up our lives and have more capacity to really focus on God and receive things from Him. And today we are returning to our series on John. We started there at the beginning of the year, and we'll go through the rest of the book throughout the rest of the year. Might take a break now and then if there are some other topics that are also relevant or that maybe are more time critical. So I'm not saying that we will just go through the whole book from now until when we are done. So we'll just keep on going. If another topic pops up or if something else that we feel like God wants us to talk about, then we'll take a break from John now and then, and then we will return to this book. But we'll come back again and again until we are through and until we covered the whole book. So today we'll look at John chapter 6, Jesus calling himself the bread of life. And indirectly, of course, it also relates to the topic of fasting that we had the last 2 weeks. So John 6, 22 to 35. The day following, when the people who stood on the other side of the sea saw that there was no other boat there except that one into which his disciples were entered, and that Jesus went not with the disciples into the boat, but that his disciples were gone away alone. However, there came other boats from Tiberias near unto the place where they did eat bread after the Lord had given thanks. When the people therefore saw that Jesus was not there, neither his disciples, they also took boats and came to Capernaum, seeking Jesus. And when they had found him on the other side of the sea, they said unto him, Rabbi, when did you come here? Jesus answered them and said, Verily, verily, I say unto you, you seek me not because you saw the miracles, but because you did eat of the loaves and were filled. Labor not for the food which perishes, but for that food which endures unto everlasting life, which the Son of Man shall give unto you. For in him has God the Father set his seal. Then said they unto him, What shall we do, that we might work the works of God? Jesus answered and said unto him, This is the work of God, that you believe on him whom he has sent. They said therefore unto him, What sign do you show then, that we may see and believe you? What do you work? Our fathers did eat manna in the desert, as it is written, He gave them bread from heaven to eat. Then Jesus said unto them, Verily, verily, I say unto you, Moses gave you not that bread from heaven, but my Father gives you the true bread from heaven. For the bread of God is he who comes down from heaven and gives life unto the world. Then said they unto him, Lord, evermore, give us this bread. Jesus said unto them, I am the bread of life. He that comes to me shall never hunger, and he that believes on me shall never thirst. Let's set the context right of this story. The day before, Jesus fed the 5,000. Pretty famous story. Most of us have read it many times before. So people were there listening to Jesus. We're like, okay, they're all hungry. What do we do now? Small boy came. He had 5 loaves and 2 fish. Jesus was like, okay, that's enough. I'm going to feed everyone here. Everybody sat down. Everybody was full at the end. And 12 baskets of food were left over. That was the day before. Then Jesus walked across the lake. Bible doesn't clearly say why, but I would assume that he needed some alone time. He was human, just like you and me. He was tired. He was stressed out at times. He came to the point where he said, I need to be recharged. I need to be refreshed. I really need to be re-energized. And so he was probably like, I need solitude. I need time with my father alone. Where do you get that? Well, in the middle of the lake, in the middle of the night, that's a good place where you don't get disturbed. So he was there, probably having alone time with the father. Following morning, arrived on the other side of the lake, and the people found him once again. Let's go through the details. So that's the context, and that's where it starts in verse 25. And when they had found him on the other side of the sea, they said unto him, Rabbi, when did you come here? Remember, they were looking for him. Maybe this was partly a surprise, because they couldn't really figure out, okay, how did he get there? They had their theory with the boat and everything, but they kind of knew, okay, he wasn't in the boat, but there were no other boats. They couldn't really think about, okay, maybe he walked across the lake. That was obviously beyond their imagination. So partly it was a surprise, but still they were looking for him. Maybe they didn't know what to say. Maybe they were just a little bit startled. Maybe it was just a way of starting a conversation. Maybe they just tried to be nice to Jesus and be like, hey, how do you get here? What's going on? So they're trying to start a conversation. They're trying to start by being nice to him. They're trying to have small talk with him. Jesus, however, was having none of that. Jesus was not in the mood for small talk as well. He got right to the point. He looked right through their niceties, and he exposed them right away. Verses 26 and 27. Jesus answered them and said, Verily, verily, I say unto you, you seek me not because you saw the miracles, but because you did eat of the loaves and were filled. Labor not for the food which perishes, but for that food which endures unto everlasting life, which the Son of Man shall give unto you. For on him has God the Father set his seal. So in the most loving and gentle way, Jesus rebuked them right away. They try to be nice to him. They try to have some small talk. And Jesus is like, okay, here's the deal. You guys follow me because I filled your bellies. You guys followed me, you looked for me, you went across the lake in a boat, or maybe they walked around the lake, we don't know all those details. And all you want is, you want a free meal. Yesterday you were hungry, there was no McDonald's around, no restaurant, no nothing. I gave you a nice meal, you didn't have to pay for it. And now, one day later, all you want from me is another free meal. All you want from me is me filling your belly. That's why you're following me. That's what you're after. You just want to have a good time. You just want to have a free meal. You just want me to fill your bellies. That's not why I'm here. You guys are missing the point. In the most gentle way, Jesus just cut the chase, and he was just like, let's talk about the real issues here. Let's talk about your heart attitude, and let's talk about why you're following me. Because you're following me, and on the outside, everything looks nice. But deep down in your heart, you're following me for all the wrong reasons. I didn't come to give you a free meal. There's something else at stake here. He's saying, think about it. You were happy yesterday that I fed you, and now less than 24 hours later, you're hungry again. Is that really what you want from God? Is that what you're limiting, Jesus speaking, is that what you're limiting me to? Is that all you're pursuing? Is that all you want, just 3 times a day or maybe 2 times a day? That I fill your bellies? Is that how you see me? And Jesus is saying, stop pursuing that kind of stuff. Set your aim on something much, much better. Set your aim on something that truly satisfies. Set your aim on something that will last. Set your aim on something that is way better than just a nice meal. Pursue that instead of just going after a free meal. He was very gentle. He didn't call them names. He didn't rebuke them or anything. He wasn't mean to them. In the most gentle way possible, Jesus just directly exposed their hearts and brought the attention to the real issue. Why are you following me? What do you want from me? Because what you're currently pursuing in me is not what life is all about. And that's not why I came. So the people started being interested. Now, let's not forget, these people were religious. They all knew the Old Testament. So this is very different from someone, sometimes we share the gospel with someone here, and people really have no idea. And these people here that we are dealing with in this story, they all knew the Old Testament. They all knew at least a theory about God. And so they all knew Jesus' claims and how Jesus' claims fit together with the Old Testament. So they start being interested. Verse 28. Then said they unto him, what shall we do that we might work the works of God? They knew one thing. What Jesus is talking about can only come from God. They knew only God can satisfy. So when Jesus talks about food that doesn't perish, they immediately knew, okay, you're talking about something that comes straight from heaven. And they also knew, we got to do something. God doesn't just bless everyone all the time, automatically. Every single person has to do something. And so they were asking the question, what do I have to do, what do we have to do in order so that God blesses us with this true food, with this everlasting food that doesn't perish? And Jesus gives the answer. Verse 29, Jesus answered and said unto them, this is the work of God, that you believe on him whom he has sent. Again, just to be clear, the people knew Jesus' claims. They knew what Jesus was saying, and they knew that Jesus was claiming to be the Messiah. Jesus claimed to be the Son of God. Now, not all of them believed in him. Most of them didn't at the time. But they all knew what he was about, and they all knew what kind of claims he made about himself. And so Jesus was basically answering the question, what must you do to have eternal life? Jesus' reply was, believe that I am the Messiah. That is the work that you need to do. Not like in the Old Testament where they said, okay, you need to do all these sacrifices and all these rituals and everything and all these commandments, and when you break one, then you have to do this. That's not how you get blessings from God. If you want to be blessed by God and receive this eternal food, what do you need to do? Believe, Jesus speaking, believe that I am the Messiah. So the people want to put Jesus to the test. Verses 30 and 31. They said therefore unto him, what sign do you show then that we may see and believe you? What do you work? Our fathers did eat manna in the desert, as it is written, he gave them bread from heaven to eat. In other words, they were saying, well, you want to be the Messiah? You claim to be the Son of God? Fine. Prove it. Show us something where we have no other explanation but believe this can only be God. And if you do that, we'll believe in you. Now, let's rewind 24 hours. What did Jesus just do? He just fed 5,000 people with 5 loaves and 2 fish, and there were 12 baskets left over. And now you're coming and you are saying, do something significant, show and prove that you are the Messiah? What is that all about? I mean, Jesus couldn't have made it any clearer that he has power, that he has authority, that he is God, because there's just no other explanation for this miracle that had just happened other than Jesus did what he did in the name of God. Isn't this miracle significant enough? Obviously not for the people. Their reference point is manna from heaven. God gave the people manna in the wilderness, and so for them, it was not enough that Jesus just created food out of thin air. We don't know exactly what they were thinking, but maybe they were like, well, maybe Jesus planned it. Maybe he's trying to deceive us. Maybe Jesus was hiding tons of food under the rocks and nobody saw it, and he just, at the right time, he just kind of brought it out of his hiding place and then he fed everyone. And maybe that's the kind of thing that Jesus did. Maybe he worked together with the disciples. Maybe they planned it and they just lured us into the wilderness and then suddenly there was food out of nothing. But in reality, it was just a big deception. We don't know what exactly they were thinking. But somehow in their minds, they tried to rationalize the miracle. Even though they had seen it with their own eyes, it was not enough for them. And so they said, we need a bigger miracle. What you had just done yesterday is not enough. We need something where there is no alternative explanation. We need something that where we can be absolutely sure that you can't fool us. And how do we do that? Make something fall from heaven. If God did this in the Old Testament and you claim to be the Messiah, you can do this as well. So make food come from heaven. Make it fall. This morning it was snowing. So make it fall from the sky and just, it's not snow, it's not rain, it's food. Then we will believe in you, because then there will be no other explanation. Then we can be absolutely sure that you didn't just hide the food somewhere or try to deceive us. Then we can know that you are really God. What they really did was they rationalized Jesus' miracle. They tried to find an alternative explanation for what Jesus had just done. Now, before we judge them too harshly, I have to admit I sometimes do the same. I sometimes limit God's miracles and call them coincidence. Or I doubt later on whether this was really God. Prime example for me personally, Shanghai, 2015, when we felt God was calling us to move to Germany, and we asked God for several signs. Some of them were pretty impossible. Some of them were pretty crazy. And within a week or two, God just answered every single time. And it was so obvious at the moment. It was so clear at the moment. And we were just like, okay, God, it can't get any more clear. You really answered this prayer in a miraculous way. So yes, we see that you're in it. Yes, we are going. Couple of days later, was this really God? Or was this a coincidence? After the miracle, eventually doubts started to creep in again. I don't know about you, but I certainly have those kind of moments when I know that God was working and I'm absolutely convicted that this was a miracle from God. But then over time, a day later, a month later, a year later, 5 years later, I look back and I start having doubts and I start questioning. Was this really God or was it just a coincidence? Sometimes we start to rationalize miracles that Jesus performed. And this is exactly what the people did here as well. They witnessed a miracle. They knew that this was not possible. But within a day, within 24 hours, they started having doubts again, whether this was really God, whether this was really a miracle, or whether there's some form of other explanation apart from God, how this had just happened. So that was their situation. Now let's think about what they were asking for. What had just happened? The day before, Jesus filled their tummies. Day after, they meet again. Jesus just rebukes them and tells them, hey, don't run after physical food, because that's not the real thing. There's something better. And what are they asking for now? Manna. Physical food once again. They still didn't get it. They still didn't understand what Jesus was trying to tell them. They still had their sight set on, I want you to give us another meal. I want you to feed us again with physical food. And they still haven't realized what Jesus is really offering them. They are still completely missing the point by asking for manna from heaven for physical food. So, now Jesus tells them something about true food. He's coming, slowly directing them towards his main point. Verses 32 and 33. Then Jesus said unto them, verily, verily, I say unto you, Moses gave you not that bread from heaven, but my Father gives you the true bread from heaven. For the bread of God is he who comes down from heaven and gives life unto the world. So what is Jesus saying here? He's saying manna wasn't even the real miracle. Of course it was a miracle. I'm not taking anything away from what happened, how God fed the people in the wilderness. But what Jesus is saying here is, that wasn't the biggest miracle at all. Manna was just a symbol. It was food from heaven to feed the Israelites during the 40 years in the wilderness. But what happened to them? They still died. They still had to eat manna every day, three times. It was still physical food. The true bread from heaven, the true miracle, is not manna. Manna is just a symbol of someone who is to come. The true bread that was going to come one day. Manna was just a symbol of Jesus himself, the true bread of life. Did the people who ate the manna live forever? No, they didn't. Were they completely satisfied with manna? No, they were not. Did they have to eat once and then they were full for the rest of their lives? Obviously not. It was still physical food, and it was provided in a miraculous way, but it was still not the real food that Jesus is talking about in this story. The real food is the Messiah, the true food that comes from the Father, that comes from heaven, the person who saved all mankind. And of course, we know Jesus talked about himself, and he will state that in a second. So at this point, he just told them, there is true food, don't just run after me because I'm giving you physical food, that's not what it's all about. So the people started wanting that food. Verse 34, then said they unto him, Lord, evermore, give us this bread. They didn't want Jesus, but they did want that true food that leads to everlasting life. That's what they wanted, but not Jesus. But then Jesus makes it clear in verse 35. Jesus said unto them, I am the bread of life. He that comes to me shall never hunger, and he that believes on me shall never thirst. Looking back at how the story started, what was his first rebuke? He was telling them, "You come after me because I fed your because I filled your bellies." Now he is saying, "Don't come to me like that. Come to me, believe in me, believe in my claims, believe in me being the Messiah, and then I will fill you. Then you shall never hunger again. Then you shall never thirst again." Everything we have been talking about so far in this story points to the fact Jesus is the bread of life. He filled their tummies with physical food in the beginning. They wanted more physical food. Jesus rebuked them for pursuing physical food. They talked about manna, food that was given in a miraculous way, but which was still physical food. Then Jesus started talking about real food. They wanted to have this food that gives everlasting life. And now Jesus is putting that all together. And he's saying, "I am the one. What you are looking for is me. What you are looking for is not my miracles. What you are looking for is not me providing physical food or physical stuff of this world for you, because that will never satisfy. What you are looking for is being in a relationship with me. What you are looking for is finding forgiveness in me. What you are looking for is putting your trust in me, the Son of God. And that will feed you, not just physically, but in much deeper ways. I am the answer," Jesus says. "I am the Messiah. I am the true bread of life. I can satisfy." He's saying, "Come to me, pursue a relationship with me, follow my commandments, put your trust in me, and then you will be truly filled. Then you will be truly satisfied." And not just temporarily, like manna that they had to eat again and again and again, but then you will be completely satisfied forever. So what does this mean for us? How does this story apply to us? Well, let's put ourselves in the shoes of these people who talked with Jesus. First of all, we cannot limit Jesus to be the provider of earthly stuff. How often, in Shanghai, I remember one of our preachers, he often used this analogy. Are you seeking Jesus' hand? Or are you seeking Jesus' face? If you're seeking Jesus' hand, all you're seeking is stuff from God. But that's not being a Christian. That's not the Christian life. The Christian life is seeking Jesus' face. The Christian life is seeking a relationship with him, being face to face with him, communicating with him, talking to him, hearing from him, all those things. And if we're just seeking his hand, we're offending him. Because that's not why he came. He did not give us his life so that we get rich, so that we have a comfortable life, so that we get all our wishes fulfilled. He did not die for that. He died to give us everlasting life. He died to give us forgiveness. He died to restore our lives, to make us whole again. He died so that we can come to the Father again and be in the presence of the Father. That's why he died. And if we just see him as the provider of earthly stuff, it's an offense to him. And we have to be careful that we don't limit him to that. Listen to your prayer life. Listen to how you communicate with him. Listen to what you're telling him, what you're asking of him. And ask yourself, am I truly seeking Jesus' face in the way I relate to him, or am I seeking Jesus' hand? Second application, what miracles have we rationalized? Told you earlier about my story. I tend to rationalize what Jesus has done in my life. And with some distance, a week later, a month later, a year later, sometimes I start finding other explanations rather than this was God. Is there something like that in your life as well? We have to remember, Jesus doesn't perform miracles for the sake of performing miracles. He doesn't perform miracles to make our lives more comfortable. He doesn't perform miracles to make us rich. That's not what he wants to achieve. Jesus performs miracles to increase our faith. It's not about the miracle for the sake of the miracle. What he wants to do is when he performs a miracle in your life, in my life, that it increases our faith, that we grow in our relationship with him, that we give thanks to God for what he has done. We give glory to him. We give honor to him. We love God for what he has done. We praise God for what he has done. We trust God more. That we can look back and say, you know, 2 years ago I was in a really tight spot and God came through. Now I'm in a tight spot again. God will get me through again. I know he is faithful. The miracle in the past has increased my trust in him, has increased my faith in him. All those things. That's what he wants to achieve when he performs a miracle in your life, when he answers a prayer in your life, in my life. That's what he is after. What happens when we rationalize a miracle? All this goes right out of the window. Because if I now say, you know, let's example, I'm in a tight financial situation, and I can say, you know, I've been in these kind of situations before, I trust that God will get me through again, then I will really walk with God through the crisis. But if I then look back and say, yeah, I was in this kind of situation before, but somehow it all worked out, and somehow, by coincidence and everything, I'm still here, so all went well, then I don't trust God in the next crisis. Then I don't run to him in the next crisis. Then I have nothing to stand on from the past that would get me through this new crisis. So every time we are rationalizing a miracle, we are really destroying the very purpose for which God has performed the miracle. Is there something like that in our lives? Where we know that God has performed the miracle, we know that God has done something, he has answered our prayers in the past. And then with some distance, suddenly we start coming up with other explanations. And we start questioning whether that was really God. And we confuse ourselves with these kind of thoughts. If that's the case, then maybe it's time to really stand on those kind of, on that kind of faith again that we originally had. Now let's get back to the topic of the last couple of Sundays. Let's talk quickly about fasting. Fasting reminds us to pursue what truly satisfies. When we fast, we practice what we say we believe. We practice what we say when we say, physical food is not what I really want. Physical food is not what this life is all about. Physical food is not what I'm pursuing in this life. What I'm really after is Jesus. And so a season of fasting often helps us get the right focus again. When we say, for a time, I'm going to cut certain things out of my life, then we remind ourselves. We have to rely more on God. And we remind ourselves, Jesus is the bread of life. I get so tempted sometimes, I get so distracted by these things, lots of great restaurants out there and lots of wonderful ways of enjoying food, and there's nothing wrong with that. But for me personally, I need this reminder regularly, because the more I eat of these things, the more I've put my focus on these things. And so regularly, I need to remind myself by saying, you know, I'm going to cut that out for a while so that I focus back on what the true food is, and that is Jesus. So fasting helps us putting into practice what we say we believe. Jesus is the bread of life and nothing else. Which brings us to the last point. Only Jesus can truly satisfy us. Jesus said that we cannot love this world and God. We have to choose. And if we love the things of this world, it shows that we don't love God. It's either or. We cannot have both. Only Jesus can truly satisfy us. If we pursue anything else, we will be disappointed. And that's on purpose. God will allow us to feel disappointed, not because he's mean, but because he wants us to turn back to him. He allows us to run after other things. He allows us to run after career. He allows us to run after food. He allows us to run after sex, anything. And he will allow us to be dissatisfied again and again and again and again until we get it. Until we come to the point where we realize nothing in this world will satisfy. If I want to have true satisfaction, I need to run to Jesus and I need him to satisfy me. Nothing else in this world ever will. So maybe some of us notice today that there's an area in our lives where we are pursuing something or someone else. And maybe today is time to shift our focus again, to return to God, to go to Jesus, and to say, Jesus, I'm sorry, I have looked for satisfaction in something else. Today is the day to return to you. Only you can satisfy. Only you are the bread of life. Nobody and nothing else. So in conclusion, Jesus offers to be the bread of life to you, to me, to everyone. But in the end, it's our choice whether we want to feed on him. The question is not whether we are saved, but the question is whether we are able to live the life that Jesus intended for us. He offers us a life full of joy, full of peace, and full of satisfaction. As Jesus puts it in his own words, he offers us life in all its fullness. That's what we can have when we pursue the true bread of life. But if we pursue anything else, we will lack these gifts that Jesus wants to give us. And we will live a life that maybe completely or maybe only partly, but at least part of us will feel empty and dissatisfied. Jesus offers. Now it's our choice. We put our trust. We choose who or what we put our trust in. We choose who or what we want to satisfy us. And whatever we choose, that's what we will receive. That's where we will receive our satisfaction from. But we cannot have both. Let's choose Jesus today. Let's choose to be filled by him. Let's choose to be satisfied by him for his glory and for our satisfaction. May we pray. Jesus, thank you that you are the bread of life. You are the one who can satisfy us in ways that go way beyond anything we can comprehend right now. And one day in heaven we will see and we will experience how much you really satisfy all our needs. And not just temporarily, not just a bit, but you will satisfy us completely. You will satisfy us forever. Thank you for this hope. Thank you for these promises. And thank you that we can truly run to you and knowing that this is not just for the future, this is not just something that will happen in heaven when we meet you face to face, but it's available to us today. It's available to every one of us. And thank you also for the warnings that you have given us, that truly we cannot love this world and love you at the same time. We cannot be satisfied by this world and by you at the same time. We have to make a choice. Jesus, help us to really put into practice what you have been speaking to us today. Help us to feed on you only. Show us, Lord, if there is anything else that maybe completely or maybe partly where we partly put our trust right now. I sense God is saying the word money. That maybe some of us are really putting our trust in money right now, at least partly, or in job or something like this. Please speak to us. If there's anything that we put our trust in right now for satisfaction, and give us the faith and the courage to surrender that to you and to give that part of our hearts to you as well, so that we can be truly satisfied in you. Thank you for being our bread of life. Give us the faith and the courage to feed on you only, for the glory of your name. Amen. As usual, take a few moments just between you and God.